Okay, we are now at 3:30. Which means we are a long way behind.
Half an hour behind.
Half an hour behind. And we have one issue left.
Yes.
Okay, since we have some room, unless somebody has a need to get out the door for a plane ride, I propose that we just hammer on until we're done. Takashi, you're up again. Paper 9, 9A and 9B, correct?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Okay. So for this meeting, the staff have prepared three agenda papers in relation to IFRS 5 issues, agenda papers 9, 9A and 9B. For the agenda paper 9B, the staff provided a summary of the new issues that were recently brought to the attention of the staff. We are planning to bring staff's analysis on these issues at a future meeting, so we do not expect the Interpretations Committee to discuss these issues at this meeting. So let us move to agenda paper 9.
Okay, let's stop for a minute. I assume nobody has a problem with waiting on these, since we're not, the staff isn't ready. These are identified as issues that hadn't previously come to our attention. So just, I hate to invite you all, but if you've got anything else, let them know. Because we do need to put a ribbon around this. So these are the issues that we know we need to think about. If you know of any others, please communicate with that to the staff. Okay, Takashi.
Okay, so agenda paper 9 deals with a question that came out of the IFRIC meeting in November 2014. At that meeting, the Interpretations Committee discussed whether certain cases of loss of control of subsidiary, such as loss of control through dilution, exercise of call option, and a change in a shareholder's agreement, meet the criteria for classifying such events as assets held for sale. As a result of the discussion, the Interpretations Committee asked the staff to consider the broader question of whether loss of control is the key, or whether there also needs to be a disposal activity in order for the event to be classified as held for sale. And in response to this request, the staff looked at the current requirements of IFRS 5 and also the history of the amendments to IFRS 5. As a result of the analysis, the staff think that the current requirements of IFRS 5 seem to indicate that a disposal activity has to occur in order for an event to be classified as held for sale or distribution, and that loss of control alone is not sufficient to trigger such classification. Despite that observation, we think that expected events resulting in loss of control of subsidiary, even with no disposal activity, should be accounted for in the same manner as a sale plan involving loss of control. This is because we think that useful information would be provided if IFRS 5 accounting were applied to such events. Therefore, we think that the issue is worth considering further, including considerations of possible unintended consequences and assessment on these events before deciding whether and if so, how to amend IFRS 5 in this respect. So the questions of the Interpretations Committee are, do you agree with the staff analysis as summarized in paragraph 40 of the paper? And do you agree with the staff recommendation as described in paragraphs 41 and 42 of the paper? Thank you.
as I understand the staff conclusion, what you're saying is that absent an amendment, these events would not get IFRS 5 accounting and disclosure.
That's right.
Because they are not a disposal. You haven't put anything up for sale. You haven't sold anything. So that's one conclusion, is that you can't get them into 5. The other conclusion is that you ought to get them into 5, and that therefore we should recommend an amendment to the board. So can I separate it that way into two questions? Okay, let's then address the first question, that prima facie they don't fit into 5. Bob?
I guess the question I have for the staff, I agree with the principle that there has to be an event transaction, but we call that a disposal activity. And what are we using as the definition of a disposal activity? Because very broadly, I could consider a distribution to owners or an abandonment a disposal activity. I am disposing of the subsidiary. And I don't think we mean to include that. So I'm wondering if we're trying to think about a transaction in which I lose control, the parent loses control and also receives something of value. And is that what we mean? Is that what the staff means by disposal activity?
Before getting into the notion of disposal activity, first we thought that these assets, the carrying amount of these assets are not recovered through continuing use. So in the case of abandonment, it is assumed that the continuing, the carrying amount of the assets is recovered through continuing use until the point of abandonment. So that excludes the such events from classification as held for sale. And in the case of disposal activity, what we were thinking is that whether it involves a physical disposal activity. In the case of sales activity and distribution to owners, they both result in a fiscal disposal activity, whereas just a loss of control of a subsidiary can happen without a fiscal disposal activity, as in the case of dilution of shares.
So there is a transfer in both of those cases, whether it's an actual sale or a distribution, there is a transfer. In response to your question about there is something received in return, I think typically, yes, that is the case, even if in the case of a distribution, you are providing it to your shareholders and you're not necessarily getting something physical back in return. But nevertheless, IFRS 5 envisages that as being still within its scope, as being an acceptable method of disposal. But both of them including an actual transfer across to the other party.
Bob, my approach to it, going all the way back to my FASB, is fairly simple-minded. I had it yesterday and I don't have it today. And abandonment, I would have said, I had it yesterday and I don't have it today. I surrendered title or whatever else. So I suppose I could say I sold it for zero.
Yeah.
So I was simple-minded. And the difficulty with this is that the reason I parse it into two questions is that, as I said in November, you have the same shares after this that you had yesterday. And that's the difficulty. Charlotte?
On your first question, I agree. I think that's where we are now is you couldn't get there under IFRS 5. I suppose my concern is I'm not sure you should always get there because it's not just the act of losing control that triggers you being in IFRS 5. It's the question of whether you're going to recover your carrying value in a different way. So to Bob's point, if you get something in return, you are obviously recovering your carrying value in a different way than continuing involvement. if you are simply diluting your shareholding, it becomes an associate, you are still recovering your carrying value through continuing involvement. You're not recovering it in another way. So it doesn't feel that you should be in IFRS 5 in that example. So I think the focus shouldn't be so much on the transaction, but your method of recovery on an ongoing basis.
That slips over the line a little bit that I was trying to draw. Maybe that's unavoidable. I think if I understand the staff view, the point was that you're not going to recover all of the assets that were previously reported in the consolidated financial statements because they've all been collapsed into a new carrying amount, at fair value.
Yes.
Of the now associate.
And I'm going to step over the line into part two.
Okay,
but I think the guidance that was added to IFRS 5 a few years ago on disposal of part interest in a subsidiary that leads to loss of control was emphasizing this transition from it being a controlled entity where you've got individual assets and liabilities on the balance sheet to being a significant influence entity where you've just got this one investment. So you may only have disposed of a small proportion of your shares that took you down, say, from a 52% to a 48% interest, but it's that transformation from controlled to non-controlled that the board said this also fits into IFRS 5.
Okay, I think Bruce, you were next.
I'll tell you what challenges me about this is, prior to the amendment where we introduced distribution to owners, I could almost get where I think a lot of you are, and that I'm saying, I always saw IFRS 5 as something I was holding to dispose of. To me, when we amended it, or does the board amend it, shall I say, to include those that you're holding to distribute to owners, I think that to me is heavily broadened what goes in there, because the difference between held for sale is I'm holding something to sell it. Okay, and I think that was very definite in my mind what that meant. When I'm holding something to distribute it, I'm saying, hang on, now I've changed the economics. Where I'm not saying I'm holding something to sell, as in I will sell to you, I'll get something back for it. I'm now prepared to use it as almost an equity transaction to distribute to owners. So the challenge I've got is, we've said, by making other commercial decisions that aren't necessarily pure disposal, as we always know it, we're bringing you into IFRS 5. Then, of course, the recent amendment that now also says, but hang on, guys, this is all part of the same plan, says, okay, it doesn't matter what economics you're using to get rid of an asset. It's all part of a single disposal plan. What I'm battling with at the moment is saying, okay, so a decision I take where, for example, I don't take up a rights offer or I don't do something is an economic decision. At the end of the day, I'm taking a decision that I know is going to have an impact on the assets I previously reported. If I've taken that decision, how is that not a decision to effectively do almost the same as a distribution to owners? I've taken a decision that's going to impact what I reported in the prior year. And I guess the only concern I've got here is, I think we're all kind of holding very closely onto this word that we're holding it for sale, what are we getting for it? But we're not getting that in all circumstances. As I said, with a distribution to owners, we're not getting that anymore. And I think that to me was a distinguishing feature, where we're now saying we're taking economic decisions outside of pure sale, as we've always known it, that are bringing things into IFRS 5. So I think if I read this very, very broadly, I could almost get those things in. Do I think it's clear? No. So I know I'm leveraging to part two a bit, but I'm going to cross that board a bit. So what I'm saying is, do I think that we could almost resolve this through an interpretation? I think in a very wide interpretation, I think you could. I think better clarity would be to clarify it in the standard. But in my mind, these things do fall within it. It's just a question of how you want to get it in.
Andrew, and then John, and then I'll ask Bonnie.
Well, to the first question, do these wider plans to lose control in some non-disposal way, are they currently in the scope of IFRS 5? I think that's ambiguous. I think you could look at a lot of the language that discusses more traditional disposal type events and conclude no, but similar to Bruce's comments, some of the language in the basis for conclusions talks about the loss of control being the most important economic event. So, you know, that's something that's probably could do with clarification. You know, on the second question, should these things be in the scope of IFRS 5? I think we've got to sit back and ask ourselves, what does IFRS 5 actually do? What information does it actually convey? And some of these fact patterns, you could go from 50% ownership with control, change the shareholders' agreements, then you've got 50% without control. IFRS 5 in some situations can involve you recognising some kind of write-down based on 100% of the assets and liabilities, which you then actually write back up when you do the IFRS 10 loss of control accounting. Now, whether that's actually useful information, I would question that. I think some of the different disclosures and separate presentation do actually at least demarcate the assets we're now consolidating and will cease to do so. But the measurement you could question, and we don't actually quite know what the measurement is. That's another set of issues on IFRS 5. So I find it hard to kind of separate out what we think the measurement is from whether the measurement is actually useful in this type of fact pattern.
Hey, John, and then Bonnie, and then Tony, I'll bring you back in.
I do agree with what Bruce had said. I think if you follow the chronology of the development of IFRS 5, I think the staff analysis is sort of on point. It starts off looking at probably a class of transactions, and then it moves to say, well, you could actually achieve the same thing by distributing the assets, so we'll expand the scope because they're similar. And then, you can actually achieve loss of control. That's a derecognition of the assets. So if I lose control, I'm economically disposing of the assets and acquiring something else, and therefore... But I think that development has actually made it somewhat ambiguous as to whether it does have to be driven by a physical disposal activity or whether it's broader. And there's certainly diversity in practice on the issue. So I wouldn't go so far as to say current IFRS 5 is clear. And what we want to extend it, I think it is somewhat ambiguous. And I think clarification would be beneficial. I think Andrew's challenge is also good. I think if you're going to widen it to include a whole lot of new transaction types which involve derecognition into IFRS 5, we need to answer some of the other problems in IFRS 5 because you're actually just expanding the universe of items to which those problems are actually applied. One of the things here in clarifying as well, we talk about loss of control in a situation where you lose control, but IFRS 5 also applies to assets. So what happens if we write a put on a property? Deeply in the money, are we going to then say it's highly probable that the asset is going to be disposed of, and therefore it's also in IFRS 5 similarly? Or are we just talking about this loss of control notion actually just applying to subsidiaries? So I think there's a whole lot of questions I think that we would have to answer in trying to clarify the scope.
So the question is, do you want to answer?
Well, I would like a fundamental review of IFRS 5. My view would be that IFRS 5 has a whole lot of issues that the board needs to consider. I think we've had a number of different papers and submissions that have come to us, and some of them we've really struggled to deal with or plot a path forward. So I think IFRS 5 needs some form of fairly basic review.
Question to Michael. Are we in a kind of a loop on this one? Didn't at one point we say we were going to assemble everything from 5 and kick it over to the board, and now we're back again?
We did, but the discussion around that was that the committee felt they wanted to have an understanding of what these issues were before they were then potentially passing them on to the board. And so that's what part of this...
We're looping with ourselves. We haven't looped with the board.
No.
Okay. Well, that's, I guess, reassuring to a degree. Bonnie, I think I said I was going to ask you for comments next.
I think I agree with many of the other comments that I think there is some question as to what the scope of IFRS 5 includes, particularly when it relates to some of these examples of loss of control. So I think I also agree that if we work on the scope, potentially expand the scope, there are a lot of other issues to consider, which I would guess would be a reassessment of the standard itself and not something that we can address through an interpretation or a series of interpretations.
Okay. I'm going to go to Tony and then Martin. And then I'm going to ask Michael what the exit is here.
I share a lot of the comments that have been made already. I think as soon as the board got to assets held for distribution as being something that falls into IFRS 5, that we moved away from it being a sale type motion, and that when I look at the scope today, I look at the reference to the definition of a disposal group, to a group of assets to be disposed of by sale or otherwise. That introduces enough ambiguity for me to say that I could probably read this to get all of these other sorts of things in. I can understand why somebody might tell me that they are all out. And then there are a series of issues that follow on for that. Some of them are in the second paper that we've got here. I guess my sense of this overall is that it's come back to us two or three times and we haven't decided what to do. Now, I'm not sure we can necessarily decide immediately what the answer is, but I do think it would be good for the committee to decide that either this long list of things can't be dealt with through an interpretation or a couple of interpretations, and therefore we send the list off to the board and we stop talking about it, or we can address it through an interpretation and a couple of interpretations and that we get on with it, rather than keep looping with ourselves, and each time the loop comes round, we found another issue to add on to the list of things we're not doing anything about. So I quite like us to sort of decide that either we can do something and do it, or we don't think we can do it because it needs fundamental surgery on the standard, and push it up. But I think I would like us to make that decision.
An expression of frustration that I think the staff shares. Martin?
Yeah, I also lack a clear principle beyond IFRS 5, whether we are talking about asset sale for sale and distribution, or whether we are or could label it assets held for losing control. With regard to the recognition, I would be fine with this. Yeah, that I have one line item where I say all assets which are more or less going out of the balance sheet have in a separate line item. The next question then is probably a more fundamental question, the question of measurement. And is it right to have the same measurement approach to each and every category of assets? And is it correct that I have the same measurement approach irrespectively of the way I'm losing control? And this is such a fundamental question, I guess, that I would kick back this topic to the IRSB, because unfortunately I believe we as an interpretation committee we have not the authority to judge on this issue, to be honest.
Let me say what I think I'm hearing, and that's going to preclude us going into an in-depth discussion on the second half of the paper. I think I'm hearing the view of many committee members that the scope of IFRS 5, while it was originally clear, you went out and you hung a for sale sign on the side of the building. That was what it was intended. A series of revisions have either made the scope ambiguous or they have to be viewed as exceptions to the scope without changing the fundamental principle. I don't think it's obvious to me which I would say those are. And I think it was Bruce and several others who said, have we so fundamentally changed the scope of five that we really don't understand it anymore? Because we've introduced a whole lot of other economic activities. So my suggestion would be that the next paper we get has got to fundamentally look at the scope of five again and allow us to reach a series of decisions as a committee that we can write down, hang on the wall, and that's our charge for then deciding whether we can do interpretations because we think we understand what the scope of 5 is. Or we need to recommend changes to the board. Am I correct, or do committee members agree with me that we have not yet fundamentally analyzed that, or at least we don't remember having done it? And so that ought to be the first topic we get on this at the next meeting. Do we fundamentally understand 5, or are there the following 6 questions about the scope that we need to answer? Once we've done that, and I agreed with the staff that we had done that, that we knew what 5 meant, but obviously the committee doesn't think so. So then the question is, once we know what it means, we can decide whether to expand it. I think that's the approach through this particular issue. Michael is nodding his head yes. Philippe is nodding his head yes. Do I hear any no's to that approach? Bonnie?
I'm going to say no, but I don't have any issues.
Okay. So you're saying no, you don't have any comments, but that's the approach you would take, or?
Yes.
Okay. This is a meeting plagued by too many negatives and double negatives. Okay. So with that in mind, what else do we have left? Do we have 9B still that we have to talk about?
We have 9, well, we did have 9A.
Excuse me, 9A. 9B is the one that we're deferring.
That's right. So 9A was picking up the discussion on 2 issues that were in the November paper but didn't get discussed in November.
Okay.
Okay, General Paper 9A contains 2 issues, one relating to the scope of IFRS 5, issue 1B, and the other relating to the definition of a major line of business, issue 2. So issue 1B relates to how to apply IFRS 5 requirements to a disposal group that consists mainly or entirely of financial instruments. The submitter thinks that it is unclear whether IFRS 5 applies to such disposal groups, referring to paragraphs 4 and 5 of IFRS 5. Paragraph 4 states that the disposal group may include any assets and liabilities and requires the disposal group to be measured in accordance with IFRS 5, whereas paragraph 5 states financial assets are excluded from its scope for measurement purposes. We analyzed this issue from the perspectives of classification requirements and measurement requirements. As for the classification requirements, we think that the disposal group considered here would be classified as held for sale if it met the criteria set out in paragraphs 6 to 14 of IFRS 5, because it is clear from paragraph 4 that a disposal group includes, among other things, assets excluded from the measurement requirements of IFRS 5. As for the measurement requirements, we think that this measurement issue is another case of the issue of how to recognize an impairment loss when the impairment loss exceeds the carrying amount of non-current assets in the disposal group, which one of the 2 issues that the Interpretations Committee discussed at its meetings in September 2013 and September 2014. At its meeting in September 2014, the Interpretations Committee decided to discuss new issues, including this one, before deciding how to proceed with old issues. Therefore, we think that this measurement issue would be appropriate to consider within the context of the impairment issue that the Interpretations Committee discussed at its meetings previously. Do you agree with the staff's recommendation?
Okay, let's take 1B and 2 separately. So we're talking staff recommendation on 1B. which I would find in paragraph 37. Bruce?
Yeah, I actually personally think that the stand's pretty clear on what you do in 1B. I think it tells us we're in the scope. If you meet the requirements, you're in the scope of IFRS 5, and yes, the measurement is done under IFRS 9. I would say that to me is what you would do.
John?
Yeah, I agree to staff analysis. I think it's in the scope, but I think the measurement is not, and then it just leads you on to the question about the impairment, which we had before the committee before, so I agree with the staff.
Any disagreements on this one? Tony?
It's clear enough, I think. I couldn't look at the two paragraphs the staff talk about as getting the different answers and allowing me to measure the disposal group at fair value less cost to sell and use the disposal group as my unit of account. So I think that's probably consistent with what I said before. I think we had the same difference of views previously, but I don't think the standard is clear that you don't start by measuring the disposal group as a whole at fair value less cost to sell. And so I think I would find that an acceptable approach in some circumstances, and arguably if you are going to sell this disposal group, a better reflection of the economics. I can understand why people might look at it differently, but I don't think the standard is clear.
So you would throw this back into the hopper of our previous debate around our issue of the scope?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anybody else around the table. They were maybe exhausted at this point. But Bonnie, did you want to come in on this?
No, I don't have any comments on 1B.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so for issue 2, it is about a definition of a major line of business. The submitter notes that a paragraph 32 of IFRS 5 refers to the notion of separate line of business or geographical area of operations when providing the criteria for meeting the definition of a discontinued operation. However, it notes that IFRS 5 does not define what should be considered as a separate line of business. The submitter showed with 3 cases that the notion of separate major line of business or geographical area of operations can be interpreted differently depending on how an entity associates that notion with the definition of operating segment as defining IFRS 8. We note that this issue involving a definition of major line of business relates to a topic that is currently on hold under the ISB's project on financial statement presentation. Therefore, we recommend that the Interpretations Committee should consider this issue when deciding how to proceed with all issues as discussed in a September 2014 meeting. Do you agree with the staff recommendation?
Andrew?
On this one, I do feel this is something if we wanted to, we could actually make progress with through probably an agenda decision. It's quite a different issue to the previous ones we've discussed. The financial statement presentation projects, I mean, Alan might correct me if I'm wrong, but I suspect that could be a few years yet before that actually results in any clarification. And fundamentally, this is going to be a matter of judgment whether a particular set is a major line of business. I think a gender decision which mentions judgments and explains something about the relationship or the difference between an operating segment and a major line of business in an IFRS 5 context would do what needs to be done.
Martin?
I'm not sure about the agenda decision. Probably it would then end up into agenda rejection. Just clarifying, what probably major line of business could mean, because I mean it's judgmental, and what was discussed in former times is whether it could be a segment. But if you really look in real practice, you see that in general, at no time a clear segment then is sold. in general, you have always some assets which still will be kept and other ones which will be given up in addition. So that you end up with a kind of, say, guidance. If you sell a segment, then there's always the question, okay, so how broad might this modifications are allowed that I'm still talking to sell, that I'm still allowed to talk about selling a segment. It is not always a clear cut if you do divestments. For sure, the predominant part of assets may be sold for a segment, but not all. And sometimes other ones are given up in addition. So therefore, I believe it is a question of judgment. It will be a question of judgment. It is a question probably of accounting policies and comments, disclosures, what was done. One could probably add a little bit on question, at least it should be something where goodwill would be allocated or tested for. But I guess with the possibilities we have, we could not end up into another clear, much clearer guides.
Okay. Until you got to the last sentence, I thought I knew where you were going. I thought you were agreeing with Andrew that we could do something through an agenda decision, but you're saying no, you don't think
that we was my starting point. I said, okay, we could probably try an agenda decision, which then ends up into a non-interpretation or a NIFRIC. But what could be in? It could be in that it's based on facts and circumstances, management judgment, and on relevant disclosures.
I would agree that waiting for the financial statement presentation project would involve a very long horizon. Am I correct in that?
Medium. The scope paper goes to the board in June.
Okay.
So it's active.
And I'm thinking of this particular piece of it.
You're talking about 1 or 2 years for us to get to BD phase.
Really? Okay. Right.
Probably another comment to add. For me, an even more important question then would be when we are closer to know exactly what is a major line of business, what is the accounting effect in terms of elimination? So that the next paper we probably will discuss, is what will be eliminated and what is the purpose? And then knowing that, we could probably come back to that question.
Okay. Andrew's proposal was that we might be able to deal with this one through an agenda decision. Martin has said, "Nah, we wouldn't really add much to the general body of knowledge." How many would support pursuing this separately as an agenda decision?
Six in the room.
Six in the room. Bonnie, your view?
I think I agree with Martin that this is a bit too broad for an agenda decision, other than what's already written in the standard, until the board addresses it in the project.
Okay. So it's still over to the financial statement presentation. Okay. That all we need for 9A?
Yes.